Today's shiur is Masecht Gittin Daf Tezvav, and we will begin on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis, 21 lines from the bottom of the Amud. In the previous shiurim, we've been discussing the concept of Hoylech Kezchi, that if somebody asks a messenger, if somebody asks a shliach to deliver on his behalf something to someone else, is it already considered as if it belongs to the recipient? Suggests the Gemara, the Lema Hoylech Kezchi, should we say that this question is actually Tanoihi, it's actually a Machloikis Tanon. And as we're going to learn now, the Gemara is going to quote a lengthy Braisa that has quite a number of opinions, and then the Gemara is going to analyze those opinions that we just learned and explain how each opinion, why each opinion perhaps holds. The Tanya, it says in a Braisa, Holech Mana Leploni, if somebody asked that a shliach take something to somebody, for Holech Ubikshav Lemetzo, and he went to find that person and he didn't find him. So the Tanya Kama's opinion is Yachzur Mishalech. It should be returned to the sender. Meis Mishalech, if by the time this messenger comes back to the sender, it turns out that the sender also is no longer alive, what is the halacha? Meis mishalayach. Rimnosan riyakva oimer, yachsul yarsh mishalayach. If he's no longer, unfortunately, alive, it should be given to his yarshim. Yesh oimerim, liyarshi shimnishtacholoi. They should not be given to the mishalayach's yarshim, but rather it should be given to the yarshim, to the ears of the people whom it was sent to. Their opinion is that in such a circumstance, since the mace made it clear that this is what he wanted, that the sender should receive this money, so we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamace. The Chum say that since we're not quite certain what to do here, so the halacha is yachloiku, the money should be divided. And as I said, we're going to explain each of the opinions as we get further into the shir. V'kan amru, here in Bavel they said that the halacha is koma shiyitz shliach yasa. Whatever the shliach wants, as the shliach sees fit, what should be done, that is what should be done. Amr of Shimon HaNasi, and Rav Shimon HaNasi concludes the Braisa, says Ayodai HaYamaisa, such a circumstance came to me once, V'amru, and I said Yachsu Yarsha B'Shalayach, that the halacha follows the opinion of Rav Nasan and Rav Yaakov, who say Yachsu Yarsha B'Shalayach, it should go back to the Yarshim of the one that sent it. Suggest the Gemara, my love, V'hok Kamiflgi, that what is the Machloikis? The Tanakama obviously holds Hoylech Lav Kuschi. Just because someone asked the messenger to take something on his behalf doesn't mean that it becomes the recipient's. The recipient doesn't acquire it, and therefore if the recipient is not found, it should be returned to the sender. Rav Nasan, Rav Yaakov Nami agree to this opinion of Hoylech Lav Kuschi, but they go one step further. Here, in the case that they were addressing, the sender passed away. So that is a new concept. The concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. But they say, v'avgav demes, so perhaps we should say, since this person passed away, so the mishaleich passed away, so his yarshim have the obligation to fulfill what he had requested, says the Gemara, we don't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. The next opinion, the Yesh Emer's opinion, obviously holds Hoylech is kischi, that if I ask somebody to take something in my behalf, it already becomes the recipient's, and therefore, as soon as he sent it, it becomes his. Reb Yehuda Nosi Om Meshum Reb Yaakov Shom Meshum Rameya Hoylech Lav kischi. We don't necessarily say that Hoylech is kischi. However, Miu Heichu Demis, even though Ravachas Hoich Lav Keschi, here, since the sender passed away, and the sender had made it clear that he wanted this recipient to receive this mana, Aminan mitzvah l'kayim devremes. V'chamayim, the chamayim ever hold, yachloiku. They're not quite certain what we should do, and therefore they suggest that it should be divided. Why? Because mesapkelhu, the Chum actually have a suffix, what is the right thing to do? Do we divide it? Since they don't know what to do, we divide it. And Tosis makes a very important observation. Tosis says that here where the Gemara says, here the Gemara is saying that Rabbanan hold yachloiku, it's not that this is what Rabbanan say, that whenever we have a suffix, the halach is yachloiku. That's not what the Rabbanan mean to say here. Rabbanan say in this specific case, we were not quite sure what to do. Here we follow the opinion of yachloiku, but that doesn't serve necessarily as a precedent for all situations. V'kan amru, here in Bavel said, shuda adif. The right thing to do is to do shuda. Shuda means it's up to the shliach to decide. And there's a machloikis rishonim, machloikis Rashi in Tosfos, what does shuda mean? Rashi seems to say that it's up to the shliach. The shliach should determine, should try to figure out what was the intent of the mishaleach. Was the intent of the mishaleach that it should always go to the, it should go even to the yarshim of the shliach, or was it his intent that if the shliach is no longer here, it should go back to him? And it's up to that shliach to make that determination. Tosfos seems to learn that it's not a situation here of him making a determination, trying to figure out what was indeed the intent. Rather, Tosfos seems to be learning that it's a special koyach, it's a special authority that Chazal gave to this person to make the decision. Chazal left it up to the shliach to make the decision what is the right thing to do. The Mefarshim asked the obvious question, why does this opinion prefer to go with shuda, to let the shliach make the determination, rather following the previous opinion that says yachloiku, we should divide the money in question? So it's a very nice answer. When we follow the approach of yachloiku and we divide the money, there's going to be somebody who didn't get all the money he was supposed to get, and there's going to be someone that got money he wasn't deserving to receive. However, by shuda, there's a 50-50 chance that everybody got what they're supposed to, that the person who was supposed to get the money got it, and the person who wasn't supposed to receive any money didn't receive any money. And therefore, this opinion feels it's better that at least we should be in a situation where possibly the person who was supposed to get what he deserves gets it, where we're, rather than being in a situation where we know for sure that somebody didn't get what he deserved and somebody didn't get everything he deserved. Rav Shimon Anasi, Ma'isos L'Shminit. As the Rishonim explained, throughout halacha, we know that there's a concept of halacha l'maisa, that whenever we have a question, if we actually see a precedent that the chachamim or chazal followed a specific approach, that gives it a lot more weight. And here, that's exactly what happened, where we have that this halacha we find was actually carried out according to Rav Shimon, like Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov. Says the Gemara, loy. That's not necessarily the correct way of understanding this braisa, because according to the way we just explained the braisa, we now have a situation that this shaila of hoylich keschi turns out to be a machloikis tanon. Says the Gemara, that's not the way to understand the machloikis. Rather, the bari, where we're dealing with a healthy person, the kul amaloi pligi, everybody will agree that a kinyan is required, and just by somebody asking a shliach to take something on his behalf, that doesn't cause a a full-fledged kinyan. Everybody will agree that hoylich lav keschi. What is the case that the Braisa is speaking about? B'shchimira. That the person who was sending this money was a very ill person, he was a shchimira. And this halacha that we've been discussing of Dibrei Shchimira k'ksuvim k'mesurim dami is actually the subject of a machloikis tanon. We've plucked the Rebbe Lozor Rabbanon k'mifki. The Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, mechalik nechasav apiv. If somebody just gives oral instructions what to do with his assets, Rebbe Lozor Omer, whether it makes no difference if the person doing this is well or not well. The halach is nechosim sheyesh lemachrayis. Property, the only way there could be a kinyan on property is nikna bekesav b'shtar b'chazaka. Those are the ways for a kinyan to be done with property. V'she'en lemachrayis, movable items, ein nikna el b'mashicha. Mashicha is the way the kinyan should be done. Although the Rishonim point out, it's not only Mashicha, it's not the only way of doing Kinyan on prop, on movable items on Metaltalin. Mesira could be done, Hagbah could be done. The point of the Gemara is that Kesef, Shtar, and Chazakah, which are acceptable ways of doing a Kinyan by property, are not acceptable ways of doing a Kinyan by Metaltalin. And the reason the Gemara chose Mashicha as the example of Kinyan by Metatlin, because Mashicha is the most common form of Kinyan by Metatlin. So according to Rebbe Lozor, a Kinyan is always required without taking into consideration the health of the person that's giving away or selling the item. However, the Chamayim, Elu V'Elu Niknim Bamira. If the person is very sick, divrei shchimara kiksuvim k'masurim dami, and it could be given over that way. Amrulot, and the Chamim indeed bring a raya to their opinion from the following story. Ma'isa b'imen shel bnei Rachel, there was a situation with the mother of the sons of Rachel, shaisa chayla, she was very ill, v'amra, and she said, tinasein kevinasi libiti. My bruise should be given to my daughter. In other words, if we followed Hilchus Yerusha, then the sons are supposed to get the mother's jewelry. Here the mother made a clear declaration that she wants her daughter to get this piece of jewelry, which was a very expensive piece of jewelry. A mesa, and she passed away. And Chazal fulfilled her wishes. Why? Obviously, because divrei shchimara kiksuvim k'mesurim dami. Amalehem, so Rebbe Lezer replied to the Rabbanan, we don't have a proof from there that divrei shchimara kiksuvim k'mesurim dami. Rather, b'nei Rachel tikmarim imam. The children of Rachel were rishoyim. They violated the halacha. Because Rebbe Lezer, we know that the Torah tells us that kloyim, they were not allowed to plant some foreign seed in a vineyard. And Rebbe Lozor says that that halacha doesn't only apply to something that grows a fruit, a vegetable, but even to thorns. The thorns should not be planted in a vineyard. And these people violated this, and they did plant thorns in a vineyard. So Rebbe Lozor says they were Rishoyim, and because they were Rishoyim, that's why Chazal penalized them and said that that even though this piece of jewelry they were actually entitled to, they should not be able to receive the piece of jewelry. So the Rishonim asked the obvious question. We have been discussing in our shiurim in this year the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. So even if we have a situation where Rebbe Lozor holds the divrei shchimara are not kiksuvim k'masurim dami, still, don't we have clearly here a situation of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, that the mother clearly indicated that she wanted that this should be given over to her daughters? So I saw that the Rishonim discussed this question, and there are two basic approaches in the Rishonim. There's the approach of the Ramban, who holds that the only time we say Divrei Shchimera, the mitzvah kaim Divrei Meis, it depends on the wording of the, it depends on the wording of the person making this request, and it has to be the Loshen Tzavo, that it's not just a gift, it's not just a request, it's a demand, so to speak. Here, we don't find that that was the kind of language used, and since that wasn't the kind of language used, we don't say that this is a situation of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. That's how Ramban learns. The Rabbeinu Tam explains that we only say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames when the person was mashlish. That means if you have someone who was wanted something to be given to someone else, and he actually asked someone else, that means Reuven wanted to have something given to Shimon, and it wasn't just that he expressed that that was his desire. He actually already gave that item to Levi to give to Shimon. Then, and only then, do we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. In the case of our Gemara, we don't find that the mother actually gave the piece of jewelry to someone else to hold, to give to her daughters, and therefore we don't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. And actually, these two approaches of the Rishonim, Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam, have very interesting halacha l'maisa repercussions. Because according to Ramban, the main point of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is that we have to see that the person was truly serious about what he wanted. And therefore, says the Marsham, speaks about the following shaila. We know that if one writes a will, unless it's done halachically, in the proper halachic manner, and the will doesn't represent what the halacha tells us, the Hilchos Yerusha, the will is meaningless, because he's going against what the Torah says. And we can't write a will, we can't go against what the Torah says. So unless he wrote a halachically responsible will, it's meaningless. But now, ask the Marsham, fine, the will isn't halachically acceptable, but isn't this a situation of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames? And a fact, the Masham suggests, that the fact that this person went and wrote the will, he went to a lawyer to make sure that the will is written at least legally, properly, clearly shows that this was his true intention, and therefore we should follow the will because of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. However, just a number of halachic points that the Pais can make regarding mitzvah l'kayim divrei mace. One is that certainly if what the mace required violates halacha, there we don't follow the opinion of mitzvah l'kayim divrei mace. Moreover, the Shaul Sechuvus Shvus Yaakov says that we only say mitzvah l'kayim divrei mace regarding financial matters. But regarding non-financial matters, there is no concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei mace. And he brings a very nice raya. He says that we find that Yaakov called Yosef and asked him to swear to him that when after Yaakov dies, Yosef will carry him to Eretz Yisrael for him to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So why did Yaakov Avinu have to go through this whole process of a shvuah? Why don't we just say this was clearly Yaakov Avinu's request, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames, because it wasn't a financial matter, says the Shvus Yaakov, and when it's a non-financial issue, we don't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. And the shaila comes up. I saw Rabbi Yoshev, Rav Volzner discuss the following shaila. Let's say someone wrote a number of checks to tzedakah, and then he passed away before the checks were cashed. So is there a concept of the mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames that the yorshim have to make sure that those checks are given over to tzedakah, or is there no issue of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames? So everybody agrees that certainly if the check, let's say the check was written January 1 date, and the person passed away January 15th, just the recipient, the tzedakah, did not have the opportunity to yet cash that tzedakah check. There, certainly, it's a full-fledged obligation that the mace took upon himself, and the tzedakah has the right to the money. The question is, what had been the din if this person had written head checks, had written post-dated checks. In other words, he wrote a check for January 30th. He wrote the check on January 1st with a date of January 30th, and he passed away on January 15th. Rabbi Yoshev seems to say that it's considered a full-fledged obligation. The fact that he wrote a head check doesn't change the halacha. Rav Ozner says that a check doesn't represent, as we've been saying, a strong obligation. It's not the Lashon Tzava. And therefore, Rav Ozner says, he says, of course, the right thing is that the Yorshim, if the father wanted to give this money for tzedakah, should give this money for tzedakah, but to apply the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis in this situation, he says he doesn't know if that concept could be applied here. The Marv Shemesh explains, why do we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis? He says, because a person in this world is not always that serious about what he says or what he does. But when a person recognizes that it's after he's going to leave the world, there's a whole different level of seriousness involved, and we know that this is truly what the person wanted, and therefore we apply the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis, and that the Yorshim should fulfill their father's request. So now that we've identified that this shaila of divrei shchimer akiksuvim k'msurim dami is actually the subject of a machloikis tanoim, explains the Gemara. Tanakam k'rebelozer. The Tanakam holds like k'rebelozer that the Bryce is referring to shchimerah. But since Rabbi Elazar holds a divrei shchimer alav k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, it doesn't make a difference since there was no kinyan. Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov Nami agree with Rabbi Elazar, but not only do they agree with Rabbi Elazar that we don't give any special authority to the divrei shchimerah, they also say that afgav the miss, even if the sender died, we don't apply the concept of lo yamina mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. The Yesh Oimrim, who hold that it does go to the recipient, to the intended recipient, obviously hold like the Rabbanon, the Divrei Shchimer K'ksuvim K'msurim Dami. Rabbi Yehuda ben Nasi Shom Mishum Rabbi Elazar Mishum Remeya, that they hold like Remeya K'Rabbi Elazar, they hold like Rabbi Elazar that we don't say Divrei Shchimer K'ksuvim K'msurim Dami. However, Heichad Amis, in a case where the sender died, that's when the Mishaleach or the Yarshei Mishaleach should receive it, because we apply the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. And the Mefarshim point out, what is the nafkamina if we follow the concept of divrei shchimer k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, or we follow the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis? Says the Mashal, if we follow the concept of divrei shchimer k'ksuvim k'msurim dami, it makes no difference if the Makabal died, or when the Makabal died. All times, as soon as the Shchimera said that I want this to be given to this person, Divrei Shchimera K'sumah Surmidami, and we fulfill, it's considered a Kenyan. However, if it's Mitzvah Kaim Divrei Emes, so we go back to what we discussed in the previous year. If, only if the Makabal, if the recipient, the intended recipient, passed away after the sender died, only he died second, then we will say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. But let's say the Makabel died before the Noisen, so then, as we explained in the previous year, we will not apply the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. V'chamo aimrim, t'chamo yachloiku. As we learned previously, the chamim aren't quite certain what to do, m'sapkluhu, and therefore they say we should be divided. So I sort of first make two observations. One is, we have here machloikis of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. So we always paskin like the Chachamim. So how could these Chachamim have a question what the halacha is? So they Farshim explained, since we see that Rabbi Elazar replied to the Chachamim, that the reason the Chachamim said that the daughters should get the piece of jewelry was a special knas, and we don't find that the Chachamim replied to Rabbi Elazar, it may be that ultimately the Chacham agreed with Rabbi Elazar that Divrei Shchimera is laf kiksuvim k'mesurim dami, and that's why these Chacham said yachloiku. Another point that I saw, Rashi says, "Misapkluhu," that there's a double suffix. One shaila is, what is the halacha regarding shemira? And the other shaila is, what is the halacha regarding mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis? And the Bnei Yeshua points out, why does Rashi have to say that they had this double suffix? As soon as they have one suffix, that's enough that we don't know how to pass it in the shaila. So the Bnei Yeshua explains, because Rashi is following the order of the Braisa. Why did the Braisa only introduce the opinion of the Chachamim that have a suffix at this point, after it already taught us that the halacha of a shchimera is the subject of a machloikis, the halacha of mitzvah kaim divrei meis is a subject of a machloikis? The order of the Braisa is very intentional to teach us that the Chachamim have a suffix regarding both of the shailas. Kan Amru, here in Bavel, they said, Shudadif, we should leave it up to the Shliach to decide. From Shimonan Nasi, Maisos Lashminin, he comes to teach us that they actually followed Halacha Lamaisa, the opinion of Rab Nosson and Rab Yaakov. Ibrailuhu. So the following question was asked. When we mention in our Braisa the opinion of Rab Shimon HaNasi, was he Nasi who? Was he indeed a Nasi? Or Mishmei the Nasi Kamer? Or was he saying it over in the name of a Nasi? So the Mefarshim say, why do we need to know? So the first question, some Rishonim explain, because we really don't find anywhere in Shas that Rav Shimon was a Nasi. And that's why the Gemara is somewhat troubled, how is Rav Shimon called Rav Shimon a Nasi? But another pshat that I saw is that we know that throughout Shas, the Gemara always wants to make sure that the opinion of a Tana is consistent. So if we need to identify who is the Tana that's saying this opinion, that if we'll find Rav Shimon in another place, opinion not being consistent with what he says here, we'll have a kasha. But if this doesn't represent Rav Shimon's opinion, it represents someone else's opinion, obviously we wouldn't have a question. Tashma, Damar Rav Yossi, Aloch Rav Shimon Anasi. That's the wording of a Braisa. Says the Gemara, that Braisa doesn't help us answer our question. Because Vadayin Tiboyloch, what does the Braisa mean when it says Rav Shimon HaNasi? Does it mean Nasi who the comer, that Rav Shimon was the Nasi who said this? Or Mishmei the Nasi coming? Or does it mean that he was saying over the opinion of the Nasi? And the Gemara says, Teiku, we all actually have an answer to this question. Gufa, says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef, Halacha k'Rav Shimon HaNasi. Says the Gemara, how can we say that the Halacha is like Rav Shimon HaNasi? According to this explanation of the Braisa that we just learned, this opinion holds that the Braisa is referring to a Shchimera, and we're not holding the Divrei Shchimera k'Ksuvim k'Mesurim Dami. But we know that throughout Halacha we say the Divrei Shchimera is k'Ksuvim k'Mesurim Dami. Answers the Gemara, Rav Yosef explains, Mukil Abibari is going to explain that the Braisa is referring to a healthy person, and the subject of this, the first explanation of the Braisa that we learned today, and this Braisa has no bearing on the question of Divrei Shchemira. Says the Gemara, the Liyarsh Mishalech Kama, but the Rav Shimon speaking about the Yarshim of the sender, and we learn Mitzvah Kaim Divrei Meis. So if the sender passed away, Rav Shimon, how does Rav Shimon say that the halacha is that it goes back to the Yarshim Mishaleach? It should go to the Yarshim of the recipient because of Mitzvah Kaim Divrei Meis. Answers the Gemara, don't say Liyarshim Mishaleach to represent that the Mishaleach passed away. Tani, the right version of Bryce is L'mishaleach, that he is still alive, and not only he is alive, but he, Baruch Hashem, is healthy and was healthy, and therefore there is no issue here of Divrei Shchemira. There is no issue here of Mitzvah L'kayim Divrei Meis. The issue here is simply of Hoylech Keschi, and we're paskening Hoylech is Lav Keschi. Hanu Lacham Eviget, Hanu Lacham Eviget, Hanu Lacham Eviget. We begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach, the second parak of our Masechta. And the second parak actually picks up where the first parak began, where we learned at the beginning of the Masechta that if a shliach brings a get, he has to say b'fani nechtam, b'fani nechtam. And we learned the machloikis of Rabbah and Rava, why Chazal want us to why they want the shlich to say this. According to Rabba, the reason is because there's a special din of lishma, that a get must be written lishma, and we want to make sure that this get was written lishma, and therefore b'fadei nechtem was said. According to Rava, the reason is because we're concerned that the husband is going to ma'arur, is going to protest against the get, and then this woman will be in a real bind. So therefore Chazal said that the shliach saying b'fadei nechtem takes care of that issue. And now we can understand better the exact wording of b'fadei nechtem. According to Rava, who says that the reason b'fadei nechtem was instituted was because of lishma, so both the ksiva and the chsima have to be made lishma, and therefore the shliach has to say both b'fadei nechtav and b'fadei nechtem. According to Rava, why does he have to say b'fadei nechtam? Why does he have to say the b'fadei nechtam? The main point is that the signatures of the witnesses should be properly mekuyim, should be properly confirmed. So the answer is, as we learned at the beginning of Amasechta, this din that is get will be confirmed and based on the testimony of this one shliach is a chiddush. Usually we need the two edim to be mekayim a document, as we're going to learn in our shir. So here, b'shumei guna, Chazal were lenient and said that the shliach alone saying b'fanei nechtam is adequate. But Chazal didn't want that anyone should make a mistake and believe that kiyum can always be accomplished by this one person saying it. So therefore they said, here we have to say a special version, a special nusach of b'fanei nechtam. So says the Mishnah, Hamevi get medinas hayam, if somebody brings a get from medinas hayam, v'ama b'fanei nechtav, avaloi b'fanei nechtam, he only said b'fanei nechtav, without b'fanei nechtam, or he said the b'fanei nechtam, avaloi b'fanei nechtav, or he said b'fanei nechtav, kuloi, I could testify regarding the entire b'fanei nechtam, or b'fanei nechtam I only could speak about chetzyoi, only half of it was signed in my presence. And as the Rishonim point out, if this case is not acceptable, certainly the previous case where he only says b'fanei nechtam and doesn't say b'fanei nechtam at all, or vice versa, certainly it's not acceptable. But we find, as the Gemara will teach us, that many times the Mishnah teaches us loizu afsu, doesn't teach us zuvei tzarech lemezu. Sometimes the Mishnah teaches us things that are obvious. Or in a case where the person said b'fanei nechtav chetzyoi, half of it was signed in my presence, or b'fanei nechtam kulai, and all of it was signed in my presence. In this case, it's possible to get. The get remains possible in all of these cases, even in the case where the person said just b'fanei nechtam, and even according to Rava that the b'fanei nechtam is the crucial part. As we said in our introductory remarks, Chazal demand that the b'fanei nechtav be said in order to avoid any confusion for any other kiyum. And according to Rava, certainly both b'fanei nechtav and b'fanei nechtam have to be said in order that we be sure that it all was done lishma. Echad amr b'fanei nechtav. If one person said b'fanei nechtav, v'echad amr b'fanei nechtam, and another individual said b'fanei nechtam, pasul. The halach is that it's pasul. So, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, in Mitzvah Shem, the question here is, if both of these people were shlichim. According to the opinion that we're going to learn in the Gemara, that only one of them was a shliach, so then it's obvious, since the halach is that the shliach has to say both b'fanei nechtav and b'fanei nechtam, and here neither shliach completed his full assignment, it's possible. But even according to the opinion that both of them were shlichim, the get is still possible, because since it's not the same person speaking both about the ksiva and the chsima, so we're going to, people may make a mistake that this is an adequate way of being mekayim a shtar, and we know it isn't, and therefore Chazal said that this is unacceptable. Shnaim Oimrim Befani Nechtav. If two people say Befani Nechtav, Vecher Oimer Befani Nechtam, and one says Befani Nechtam, which, as again Rashi says, there's a machloikis in the Gemara what the case is. We're going to explain that the case was where there was a third person who brought the get, other than those who spoke about the writing of the get, and he confirms the signature. The testimony, he says, is unacceptable because the shliach has to say both b'fani nechtav and b'fani nechtam. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, because we're going to learn in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda holds that this is not a normal circumstance, and therefore there's no reason for Chazal to make gezeiros. Echad oimer b'fani nechtav. If the shliach comes and says b'fani nechtav, v'shnayim and two other people confirm the signatures by saying b'fani nechtam, there everybody agrees that the get is kosher. Says the Gemara, Hasulamali, why do we need to repeat this halacha that b'fani nechtav, b'fani nechtam? Must be said, as we said, this is the first din we learned when we began our Masechta. We learned that I may be get the Medina Sayyom, Sark Shaymer, Befani Nechta, Befani Nechtam. So why does our Mishnah have to repeat this din? Answers the Gemara. Ha'imahi, if we only had the first Mishnah, Havamina, we would think Tsarich. It's the right thing to do. However, V'iloy Omar, if the Shliach didn't say Befani Nechtav, Kosher, the get is still considered a valid get. Kamash Malon, our Mishnah, by repeating this din, is actually teaching us that without Befani Nechtav being said, the get is totally invalid. If somebody said Befani Nechtav Chetz Yoy, half the get was written in my presence, or Befani Nechtav Pasol Kuloy, and the entire signature I could testify to, the loch is its Pasol. Ask the Gemara, when he speaks about Befani Nechtav Chetz Yoy, which Chetz Yoy does he refer to? Hi Chetz Yoy, Ilay Mechetz Yoy Rishon, the first line. Varav Elazar, Afilo Lekosba Elashita Achas Lashma, even if only one line was written properly, Shuv Ein Tzarech. So why does he have to say Befani Nechtav Kuloy? Rav Elazar says even one line is enough. Elam Rav Ashi, what he was saying Befani Nechtav on was Nechetzya Achron, which isn't an adequate way of expressing Befani Nechtav. And as we learned, there's a Machloitis Rishonim, what does Shita Rishonim mean? Some Rishonim say that Shita Rishonim means not necessarily the first line, but it's the line that contains the crucial element of the get, the name of the husband and the wife, the main points of the get. Other Rishonim explain Shita Rishonim means indeed the first line of the get. And how do we explain this machlokes? The way to understand this machlokes is as follows. The point of saying Befani Nechtav is to indicate that the get was written l'shmo. So, one mandama says that how do we know that the get was written l'shmo? The main part that has to be written l'shmo are the names and the place. So that's where he has to be able to testify. The other mandama says, as soon as we see that the first line was written properly, that is a clear indication that the rest of the get was written properly, and therefore, even if that's not the line that contains the crucial elements of the get will still be a kosher get. So I saw that the Baal HaTanya uses this concept that the first line is the most important concept. He says we find this in every day. He says a person wakes up in the morning, one of the first things he says is Alakai Neshama Shunasatabi. Why is that the way we begin our day? Because that sets the tone of the day, that a person recognizes and realizes Alakai Neshama Shunasatabi Tahirihi. What is the Neshama that we have? And what is our purpose in being in this world? And therefore he says that a person should begin his day with davening and learning, because the way the day begins sets the concept, sets the pace for the entire day. But actually, this shaila What does Chetz Yerusha mean? Shita Rishayna mean? Does it mean the first line, or does it mean the main line? I saw a very interesting nafgamina la'alocha l'maisa. According to the Man D'Amar, according to Rishayim that say that it means, as we explained, the first line, the definition is, because once we see that the cipher began writing the get l'shma, we could assume that he continued writing the entire get l'shma. But according to this, let's say we have a situation that the entire get was not written by one cipher. One cipher began the writing of the get, but he did not complete it. There, the Man D'Amar, who explains that Shita Rishayna means the first line, it will not be good enough. Because maybe the first cipher wrote his lines, Lishma, but that doesn't prove that the new cipher who picked up where the first cipher left off wrote it l'shma, and therefore the halacha would be that everybody would hold that he has to be able to say b'fadei nechtav regarding what both cipherim did. The Mishnah taught us b'fadei nechtav kulay, if the shliach said that the entire b'fadei nechtav kulay or b'fadei nechtav chetzay possible. Amar Rav Chisda, and as we're going to understand from the Gemara, the din that Rav Chisda now teaches us is not directly related to the Mishnah. Rav Chisda teaches us a din, and we're going to learn, is it or is it not in the Mishnah? But Rav Chisda says his halacha. If in a case where two Edim, the Shliach said regarding one signature, b'fanei nechtam, and regarding the other signature, we have two Edim that confirm that signature. The halach is that it's possible. My tama, I kula b'kiyim aget. Either we have a regular kiyim, the regular way kiyim is always accomplished, where the signatures are verified by two Edim. I kula b'tikunas chachamim, that we say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. But we can't combine it. And there's a machalikus rishonim, what is the reasoning for Rav Chisda's din? Some rishonim explain, because we can't combine two different concepts. In fact, I saw the Paiskim use this to say that the halach is chazaka, Masechta Baba Basra, that if somebody is on a piece of property 3 years and the person who originally owned it didn't complain, it's a proof that it's the person who's on the property. So can we combine the edus of two different, two edim will say on year one, and two Eidim will say in year two, and two Eidim will say in year three. They said, we can't combine it. It has to be, and we're going to follow, we have to follow all the way. That's one way the Rishonim explained. Another way the Rishonim explained is that if this Shliach, who's saying b'fanei nechtam on one of the signatures, knows that the other signature, there are two Eidim on, he's going to come to rely on them, and not be really certain about that signature that he's saying b'fanei nechtam on, and therefore we don't accept it. Masklav Rava, ask Rava. It's difficult to understand Rav Chisda's din. Mi'ikamidi dila machad. If the shliach had come all by himself and said b'fanei nechtam on both signatures, it would be kosher. Hash to dikatrei, which we always know in halacha, two edim are so much more powerful than one, we're going to have an issue. El Amar Rava, says Rava different din. Afilu hu ve'echad me'idim achsim sidei sheni. The shliach says b'fanei nechtam on one signature, and on the other signature, he and another person say that it's a confirmed signature, the halacha is possible. My tama, asa l'chlufa b'kim shtaras d'alma. The reason we don't want to accept this in this situation, because it can cause confusion with regular kiyim, the kanafik nichi rivadim amayna, which means as apum dechat sad, which means as follows: in order, in a regular case, for kiyim to be effective, we need to have two edim with equal strength. So, let's say we have a situation where we have a regular shtar, and one aid represents more than half of the kiyum. For example, in a regular shtar, we have two people signing, Reuven and Shimon. And Reuven walks in and says, this is my signature. If that were adequate, so already 50% of the shtar is confirmed. And then Reuven joins with someone else, Levi, to confirm the signature of the second witness, Shimon. So now he's half of that. So that's another 25%. So it turns out that 75% of the confirmation was done by one person. And halacha is apishnei edim yakum davar, they have to do it equally. Therefore, since in a regular shtar, this would not be acceptable, by a get, Rava says, it's also not. Maskel of Ravashi, asked Rav Ashi on Rava. Mika midi, dila masik ilu kula deburi. If the shliach had said his entire testimony, he would have said, b'fani nechtam on both signatures, kosh, the get would be valid. And now, because hashtad ikke chad ba'adei, there's one more individual with him, that puzzle disqualifies the get. Elam Ravashi, afila omar anihu eid sheni. If he says, b'fani nechtam on one signature, and the second signature is actually my signature, puzzle. My tama, because this turns into being a combination of b'fani nechtam and kiyam, and that is not acceptable, because it's either kula b'kima get, with the regular kiyam process, or it should be kula b'tekaras chachamim by saying b'fani nechtam. Tanan, says the Gemara, we learned in the Mishnah, b'fani nechtam kulay, if the eight says b'fani nechtam kulay, b'fani nechtam chetzio, puzzle. Ida chetzio heichadami, what is the case of the second half? Ilam the leka the kamasa like klal, that there's nobody saying any testimony regarding it, then it's obvious. Hashta, if we learnt in our Mishnah that echer amr b'fani nechtav, vecher amr b'fani nechtam, the high kamasada kulak siva, there's one person testifying on the entire writing. The high kamasa kulak siman, there's one testifying on the entire signing. Since there is no one person speaking both about the ksiva and the ksima, it's possible, even though all of the ksiva and the ksima are being addressed, chetzio, do we need to teach when only half of the signing is being witnessed, that it's possible? So this din of the Mishnah turns into being superfluous. However, before we go further, we have a rule. Tefasta mu'a tefasta, tefasta mu'a loy tefasta. When we're going to say something, we always look to say the minimum. So, obviously, we're going to be learning at this point that the Mishnah, by adding this seemingly extra din, is coming to teach us one of the dinim that we just learned. Either the din of Rav Chisda, or the din of Rava, or the din of Rav Ashi. We also know that since Tefastam Ruba Tefastam Ruba Tefastam Tefastam Ruba Loi Tefastam, what we always say is we try to say the smallest chiddush. And Rashi explains it because the larger chiddush encompasses the smaller chiddush, so we know that we're safe. But the smaller chiddush doesn't necessarily encompass the larger chiddush. So since Rava's din and Rav Ashi's din represent less of a chiddush than Rav Chisda's din, we're going to say that the extra din that our Mishnah comes to teach us is either to teach us what Rava taught us or Rav Ashi taught us, but not to teach us what Rav Chisda says, because Rav Chisda is the biggest chiddush which we're going to try to avoid. Am Rav Chisda, ulatameich. Let's follow what you're saying. B'fanei nechtav, the Mishnah taught us another din. Abafanei nechtav avlei b'fanei nechtam. The question is lomali, why do we have to mention that case? If he doesn't mention b'fani nechna, elo loy zu avsuktani. Our Mishnah should not be understood that there are extra dinim in our Mishnah to teach us new halachas. The dinim of our Mishnah are here in a loy zu avsuktani, that the Mishnah is teaching us a format that's teaching us things that are obvious. Hachinami loy zu avsuktani. So there's nothing extra. All the dinim that we're learning are not learned from the Mishnah teaching us anything extra. Rather, the way to understand the Mishnah is that the Mishnah teaches us some things that are actually superfluous, because the Mishnah is following the format of Loizu Afsuktani. And the dinim, whether it's Rav Chisda's din, or Rav's din, or Rav Ashi's din, are not related to the Mishnah, but each man of these mandarim hold that the din that they said is truly the halacha.